Good morning, Council, Mr. Harris and Mr. Kim. Are you ready to proceed today?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, and my understanding, Mr. Harris, is you've reserved 3 minutes for rebuttal. Is that correct? Okay, and then, Mr. Kim, you've asked for a warning with 3 minutes to go in your argument. Is that right? All right. Please proceed, Mr. Harris. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the Court. This case involves whether the family court had authority to order child support for a competent but disabled 25-year-old child of divorced parents who was attending college. The Court of Appeals, in its opinion as amended, found that, or concluded that, under the exceptional circumstances provision of the amended child support guidelines, the 2004 version that was in effect at the time of the hearing on this case, that the family court could deviate from the rule articulated in case law and in the guidelines, the child support was not authorized for a child over the age of 23, even if that child was attending school on a full-time basis. The case forces us to address the interplay between a very general statute, 580.47a, which basically says that child support may be ordered for an adult child or an incompetent child. The limited case law that exists construing that statute, which is primarily the Navarrete case and the Yasumura case, which we have cited in our application, and the guidelines themselves, which have been in effect since 1986, been amended a number of times before, and which were amended actually about a year before this case went to trial, to include a statement that child support for an adult child, even if the child was in school, terminates at age 23. That is a limitation which was articulated in the earlier Navarrete case. It is an interpretation which at least arguably goes back to some of the legislative history dating from the 1969 and the 1972 amendments to 580.47a. The family court, when it originally decided this case, basically focused on the statute. And as I said, the statute is very general. It says child support may be ordered for a child who is an adult or for an incompetent child, with no further guidance, no criteria articulated in the statute. The family court really did not mention the subsequent case law or the guidelines provisions that articulated this limitation of age 23. The family court ruled that good cause existed to award child support for the party's daughter who was blind, attending college on the mainland, but was 25 years old at the time of the hearing. The Court of Appeals rejected the family court's analysis and said good cause is not a basis for awarding child support beyond age 23, but went on to uphold the possibility, at least, that an award could be authorized beyond age 23. And instead, it founded that conclusion on the guidelines. And it said that under the guidelines, and disregarding the age 23 limitation in the 2004 version of the guidelines, there was an exceptional circumstances provision that the Court of Appeals felt authorized an expansion of the universe of people who are eligible for child support beyond age 23. The problem with the Court of Appeals conclusion in that regard is that the guidelines exist by statute to determine or to fix a means of computing the amount of child support that can be ordered for an eligible child or that can be ordered of parents, divorced parents. 576D7 Choir Vice Statutes is the statute that mandates the creation of guidelines and the use of guidelines in establishing or modifying child support. It's very explicit. It says that the guidelines are to be used to provide a specific, descriptive, numeric criteria for the computation of the child support.
Actually, 576D7 actually says that the guidelines are to establish the amount of child support,
correct,
right? Not eligibility for child support.
That is correct. Okay. And it's an interesting aspect of the Court of Appeals opinion because they cite that statute and they quote the considerations listed in the statute that the guideline committee may take into account in setting up the guidelines. They're all financial considerations. They have nothing to do with who is eligible. They have to do with what you can afford to pay and what the need, financial needs of the child are, et cetera, et cetera. The Court of Appeals also, in its holding, in the paragraph where it rules, goes on to say that the family court on remand, because the family court didn't address this issue of exceptional circumstances, should consider whether this particular child had educational or housing needs because of her disability, her blindness. Those are financial considerations.
So, but Mr. Harris, isn't that explicitly an example in the guidelines of an exceptional circumstance? Are you suggesting that that provision in the guidelines is in some way invalid under the statute? What exactly would your critique be of the ICA's reliance on this provision that says where the subject children have extraordinary needs, e.g. special educational and or housing needs for a physically or emotionally disabled child is an example of an exceptional circumstance? First of all, would you agree that the child at issue here fits within that category of a physically disabled child because of her blindness?
Yes.
Okay. And then why would this provision not authorize a determination that an exceptional circumstance applies in this case?
Well, it would authorize a finding of an exceptional circumstance based on, you know, depending on the facts, of course. But it depends to what you apply that exceptional circumstance. If you apply it to a determination of, for example, because of her blindness, does she need an apartment that has particular accommodations for her, and that's going to cost more money? That's a perfectly legitimate financial consideration that is allowable under the guidelines. The same would be true of, in terms of, does she need special educational courses or whatever that's going to cost extra money? But the difference that I would draw is the difference between determining the amount of child support once you've determined eligibility and determining eligibility in the first place. Eligibility for child support is a legislative function set forth in the statute in 580.47A.
But that statute is very broad in its
state. The statute is very broad. And then that raises the question, is it so broad that we need to look at the legislative history of the statute and at the subsequent case law to see how that has been applied? And I would argue, yes, you do. And the legislative history, both as to the 1969 and the 1972 amendments, is quite clear in saying that the purpose of allowing an adult child to go to have child support is so they can continue and complete their education. Now, admittedly, that language is not in the statute. It's never been in the statute. The Navarrete case, which the ICA decided, articulates a definition of what is an adult student son or daughter for purposes of child support beyond the age of majority.
And wasn't that based on the guidelines?
No, because the guidelines did not include that language and that provision until 2004 when it was amended. I would argue, although it isn't explicitly clear, that the guidelines are reflecting the case law, not that the case law is reflecting the guidelines. The Navarrete case defined a child who was an adult student son or daughter as under the age of 23 and a full-time student.
But that case didn't question the power of the court to go over age 23, to cover age 23 above. Although that was the definition, the type of issue we're asking about here, which is the power of the court to go over age 22 for whatever reason, wasn't really an issue in that case.
I think that's correct.
Are you saying that the 1986 guidelines did not include the 23-year-old?
I've looked back through them, that provision was added in 2004. Right. And that was the first time that the guidelines articulated that limitation. Although, per Navarrete, and Navarrete actually cites an earlier case, Mack versus Mack, which basically applied the same standard and the same definition. Now,
only refers to Mack as authority for that proposition.
That's correct, and quite frankly, that is a somewhat, maybe not the most heartfelt citation, because Mack really was, the decree in Mack was a stipulated decree, and it included that language. So the court in Navarrete, in relying on Mack, I mean, Mack did not, I don't think, articulate a general legal proposition that it was the facts of that particular case.
Well, Navarrete remanded the case for the trial court to apply the guidelines in effect at that time. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
And so did the guidelines at that time include this 23-year-old?
No. The guidelines said nothing about this.
Looking at the decree speaks about the completion of education or reaching the age of 23, whichever occurs first. But then I think the decree goes on and says that provision is subject to further order of the court. So wouldn't that permit the court to modify the order and extend educational benefits beyond the age of 23?
I think that language is in the decree. It's fairly standard language in divorce decrees. I would agree that it would allow the court to modify the child support award, but then the question goes back to the more fundamental issue of, can the court modify the child support award beyond what has been authorized by the legislature?
Well, nothing has in actuality been authorized by the legislature. All the legislature has said is, you know, in determining the amount of child support, you follow the guidelines. So, I mean, going beyond that, are the guidelines in violation of the statute? 580.47 says you can file a motion for support, and I assume educational expenses, before or after a child reaches the age of majority, which would indicate the legislature left it open-ended and would allow, and I suppose 2 years beyond the age of majority is still beyond the age of majority. So if 580.47 permits that, doesn't it allow the court or give the court the power to award educational support beyond the age of 23.
I think the question, if I might rephrase it somewhat, is not so much whether the guidelines would allow that as opposed to whether the statute allows that. The statute is very open, very unlimited, really. The subsequent and very limited case law has construed that, and that's long-standing case law. We've cited in our application the fact that if the legislature acquiesces in a judicial ruling, doesn't countermand it in some fashion, it becomes essentially a statutory approval or an approval of the judicial interpretation. So again, I think it comes back to whether the statute as it has been construed over a decade and a half can be interpreted now, or could have been interpreted in 2005, as authorizing child support to continue beyond age 23 for anyone other than an incompetent child.
Would you say that the 2004 guidelines supersedes Navarrete?
I don't think the guidelines can supersede Navarrete.
Well, Navarrete says 23 years old. The guidelines say 23 years old. They come after Navarrete. So would the guidelines be the controlling document?
I don't think so. Not in terms of eligibility.
Even though Navarrete was not construing the 2004 guidelines?
I think even so, and I think it goes back to the fundamental purpose of the guidelines. The purpose of the guidelines is to determine the amount of the child support. That's the mandate of 576D7. It's not to determine eligibility. The legislature hasn't delegated, and I'm not sure could delegate, to the family court that generates the guidelines the ability to define upward or downward who's eligible for child support. An excellent illustration of that is in the opinion. The opinion notes that the 2010 guidelines have added a provision that say the child support can be awarded for an adult child, a disabled child, or an incompetent child.
And do you think they have the power to do that? Is that guideline provision valid in your mind?
I do not think that's a valid, because there's no statute anywhere that authorizes that particular definition of who's eligible for child support. I think that the guidelines essentially perform two functions. It's a hybrid. Number one, they provide the formula for determining the dollar amount of child support. And that clearly is authority that was delegated to them, to the family court, by the legislature. But the second function is, it's an informative function. That the guidelines also simply reflect, for the benefit of judges, lawyers, clients, and the public, what the parameters of child support are.
So, Mr. Harris, then if you apply the guidelines, the age 23 is the cap on when the family court can award, say, educational support or support, child support. So are you saying that we have to read into 580-47 a cap at age 23 on the court's ability to award educational support or child support?
I think the family court has to cap it until the legislature or a higher court says otherwise. But the law in 2005, when this case went to hearing, was that it was capped at age 23. And I don't think that the family court had the authority to disregard that limitation, and I don't think that the the Court of Appeals had the authority to basically change it or to authorize what the family court did, possibly, based on a finding that the exceptional circumstances provision of the guidelines applied to something more than just the computation of the dollar.
So what's the source of the cap, in your view, is the Navarrete case, or that it's case law?
I think it is the Navarrete case, and I think it also is the legislative history of the 1969 and 1972 amendments to 580.47a, which frame all of the discussion in terms of we're letting an adult child get child support to complete their education, not.
And would it not be a reasonable interpretation of that purpose to say an adult child who's unable to complete their education in a standard amount of time because of a disability should have more time to complete it? Wouldn't that be a reasonable application of the legislature's statement of purpose in this case?
I think it's a reasonable and logical argument to make, but the question is, who gets to determine whether that is valid or not? I think it's the legislature's function to either to amend the law, either to deal with Navarrete and the legislative history of the earlier amendments, or to say otherwise. But I question whether it given the long-standing application of this age 23 standard, whether it is appropriate or even allowable for the Court of Appeals to just say, well, we're going to apply exceptional circumstances to eligibility rather than to this just the calculation of the amount.
With respect to this 23-year-old limit, again, Navarrete refers to MAC. MAC, you're saying that the 1986 guidelines did not include the 23-year-old limitation. Do you think it's possible that there was a family court memorandum on this issue?
There's some reference in the opinion that there was possibly a memorandum that had been issued at some point in time. No one seems to know where that memorandum is, if it ever existed. So the honest answer is, I don't know if there was a memorandum or not. I think the MAC case does make it clear that even back into the 1980s, it was a fairly common practice to put into divorce decrees that child support continued beyond age 18 if the child was a full-time student up to a maximum of 23. Now, the genesis of that is very difficult to discern. And as I mentioned before, MAC is also somewhat unhelpful simply because it was a stipulated divorce decree that included that language.
Mr. Harris?
Yes.
580-47 and 571-52.5 don't include caps on ages, that's correct?
That is correct.
And so we don't know what the legislature meant, the intent of the legislature at the time as to whether there would be an age cap. Would you say, based on the statute itself, plain reading of the statute?
I think that is correct.
Well, when you read 571-52.5, it does state that when the court establishes or modifies the amount of a child support, it could be modified, right? It allows it tells the trial court that it can modify the amount of the child support, and that's what you're relying on by saying it's the amount and not whether the child fits under the cap, the 23. Is that what you're? Because it's an amount only.
That's correct.
But if a child, if a court compels a parent to support a child beyond 23, doesn't that in and of itself increase the amount? So couldn't the legislature have been including amounts above children above 23 by saying amount?
I assume you're referring to the cumulative amount that the parent might ever have to pay in child support.
We don't know, right? The legislature.
We don't know the answer to that question.
Could have
I would say, however, that typically and traditionally, when the courts are dealing with the amount of child support, they're looking at the monthly amount payable under the guidelines, because it's impossible to know when a child support order enters how long it will continue and what the cumulative amount ever might be.
But it might not be in, it might not be contrary to the statute. If we're looking at the statute alone, separate and apart from the, what I agree with you is the common practice in family court, but it not might not be in dereliction of the statute to compel payment above 23 if it in fact increases the amount of child support that's due.
I think it's also important to look at the 1992 amendment to 58047 and the Yasumura case. They don't expressly address the issue that we're addressing here this morning, but the statute was amended then to provide that after age 18 and before age 19, the Child Support Enforcement Agency is required to send a notice to the adult child, to the adult child's former custodial parent, notifying them that unless they provide documentation that the child is a full-time student, doesn't say anything about 23, the child support will be terminated. And that the Yasumura case then says that the burden of proof to show that the child is still enrolled as a full-time student is on the child or the former custodial parent who's seeking a continuation or a reinstatement of the child support.
But that's not an issue in this case, right? There's no...
It's not directly on point,
right.
But I think it is illustrative of this idea that the purpose of the extension of the child support was to allow the child to complete or continue their education, which again goes back to the legislative history of the 1969 and 1972 amendment.
And isn't it true that, as I think the ICA also said this, but as of 1969, the legislature, the HRS 5847 said provision may be made for the education of an adult child, whether or not the application is made before or after the child has attained the age of majority. And actually, subsequent amendments added not just education, but support and maintenance of an adult child.
Amendment.
Right, as well as incompetent education, support, and maintenance of an incompetent adult child. So as far back as 1969, the legislature has always said provision may be made for the education of an adult child.
That's correct.
After majority.
And I think the 72 amendment, I assume, was intended to clarify that it could also be expenses that were not strictly educational expenses.
Right.
Mr. Harris, you're in your rebuttal time now. Do you want to continue or save that time?
If you have any other questions, I'd be happy to address them. Otherwise, I'll
save your time
I'll
for
stop.
Later. Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Kim.
May it please the court. First, let me say it's an honor to be here this morning. I truly am excited about this opportunity. I want to say that based on the court's questions of Helen's counsel, anything that I had prepared, I'd like to sort of throw out the window and get right down to it. The issue in this case, I think, has been properly framed as whether or not the family court has the power, jurisdiction, and the power to be able to make a valid award of child support for a child who is more than 23 years old. And I don't think there's any question that the prevailing practice in family court, in some respects, flies in the face of that. There was a very I think, important question that that had been asked by Justice McKenna, and that was, well, where did the age 23 limit come from? Do you think it came from a court memo? And I think that Justice McKenna probably asks that because having sat in family court, family court is probably one of the places, it's very unique because so many things have traditionally been controlled by court memo as opposed to a statute where practices get in some manner written down and they become, they have some just force of repetition. But that's not what we're here to decide today, which is whether or not parties should do something or judges can do something because it's been done before. What we're here today to decide is whether or not, in a narrow context, whether the Intermediate Court of Appeals made a mistake, whether it erred when it says in order to order child support beyond age 23, the family court may do so if there are exceptional circumstances. And I have to say, I'm in agreement with Mr. Harris that the ICA, I think they made a mistake. I do not believe the exceptional circumstances doctrine applies whatsoever to eligibility of child support. I think if you look at the 2004 guidelines that that they cited to, it refers to deviations upward or downward in the calculation of the amount of child support. So whereas the law obligates, whereas the statute obligates the family court to follow the guidelines to determine the amount, we go into the hallway in family court cases and then we do a quick calculation following the guidelines, and the court is obligated to follow that calculation unless the court finds that exceptional circumstances exist to award more or less. A good example might be Michael Jordan's son, who, if you put his income figures and mom's income figures into the guidelines, might spit out a number that says $42,000 a month for child support. Well, the family court would have the ability to follow the guidelines calculations of amount because the guidelines provide that in exceptional circumstances. One exceptional circumstance is if the guideline amount of child support exceeds the reasonable needs of the child. Okay? Another exceptional circumstance would be, well, the guideline support is not enough because this child has a sight disability, as Alana did in this case, or this child has autism, and their reasonable needs are greater than what the guidelines would otherwise order. And therefore, I believe that's what the exceptional circumstances doctrine applies to. I believe it was an error for the Intermediate Court of Appeals to order that child support may only be continued beyond age 23 if exceptional circumstances exist. And the reason I feel like that is error is because, as has been noted, HRS 580-47A, which sets forth the issue of whether the court can order child support, is... as Chief Justice Rechtenwald said first, it is extremely broad. It merely says provision may be made for the support, maintenance, and education of an adult or minor child. It enables the family court to order child support for an adult child without a restriction on age, such that if a family court were to attempt to exercise its discretion to order a parent with sufficient means to continue paying child support for its child or for his or her child so that the child may attend graduate school.
Mr. Kim, would you agree that even under the 2010 standards guidelines, for example, under the Health Reform Act now, a parent can keep an adult child on his or her health insurance plan until age 26. But under the current, even under the 2010 guidelines, that parent would then be prohibited from seeking a contribution from the other parent for
under the
that.
Yes, Your Honor, unless one of the exceptions listed in the guidelines exist, the family court.
Unless it was a disabled child.
That's right. That's right. And I want to posit that that would be, in my view, an invalid exception. I believe that when the legislature wrote, passed, and published 580-47A, it did not evince an intent to limit the discretion of the family court judges in awarding child support for minor children or adult children. I believe that as a result of practice that has in some manner become very entrenched to the point where people don't even question it in family court, the guidelines have documented or repeated what is the prevailing practice, and I believe that is the only source for the age 23 limitation. It is otherwise arbitrary, and I believe that limitation is in violation of HRS 580-47A. I think it's an artificial limit that has no foundation in the statute.
So just so I understand, you're saying that portion of the guidelines, the 2004 guidelines, that imposes a age 23 limit, completely invalid, beyond the power vested in the family court by the statute?
I believe that is that to make a blanket prohibition is in violation of the statute because it invades the family court, the grant to the family court to exercise its discretion in that area.
So we'd have to go through the guidelines and sort of categorize the different provisions as whether they're eligibility criteria or just sort of calculating an amount criteria, and you would put the age 23 limit in the eligibility criteria box, and accordingly it would be out.
That's correct, because it disqualifies persons over age 23, and it does so without any foundation, any foundational support whatsoever in the statute.
Okay, and according to then 580-47 only allows the use of guidelines in the amounts of child support. Is that your argument?
I believe that's correct.
And so it doesn't empower the court or to make guidelines to limit age, only amount.
I think that's correct. And I want to point out that when the ICA made its opinion, I think it made a number of very astute observations, just because I may disagree with the exceptional circumstances exception that it imposed. It did state that the legislature did not then or since specify how far beyond the age of majority a parent could be required to provide economic support for the education of an adult child. And that's manifest if you read the statute. It's absolutely true. The legislature did not place a limit on awards of child support for adult children. It merely said that the family court can do it. And so I want to also contrast that to something that Mr. Harris had put in his petition for cert that I think is also very true, and I think is a really, really important consideration in this case, which is that at page 10 of his brief, he stated, the legislature cannot delegate the authority to establish or amend the eligibility criteria for child support that are set forth in HRS 580-47A because it cannot delegate its legislative authority. And so to argue that then we should follow the child support guidelines, which then amend the eligibility criteria to children, adult children of 23 or younger, flies in the face of that statement, which I think is a true statement. The legislature cannot delegate to the courts the ability to create this these rules. However, the legislature did delegate to the courts the ability to exercise discretion as to whether or not this adult child should be entitled to child support at this age, even 40, okay? Or under these circumstances where there's some incapacity or there's some disability, it's entirely reposed to the discretion of the trial court, and the appellate courts get to check that discretion under the abuse of discretion standard. Right? Was this decision by the trial court so arbitrary that it would constitute an abuse of discretion under the circumstances? Frankly, I think when parents become divorced and therefore subject themselves to the jurisdiction or to the statutory mandates of 580-47, all right, they then become subject to what the legislature has ruled. The courts get to divide their property. The courts get to award custody of their children. The courts get to award child support even to adult children. All right? That's one of the things that the legislature has decided that people subject themselves to when they get divorced, and it didn't limit it. It didn't limit it. It's no more valid than if the family court issued a rule that said, we're going to divide property up to $500,000, but after $500,000, we're going to donate it to somebody or going to make some award other than what's permitted by, you know, case law and the statute.
Mr. Kim, just so I understand the implications of your provision, I presume you're telling us that this entire section labeled adult dependent children, at least in large part, would be invalidated. The provisions that talk about age 23, that limit. Are there other portions of the guideline under the test that you're advocating for today that would be invalidated, just so we understand the implications of what you're asking us to do today?
Just so I understand, Your Honor, may I ask whether you're referring to the 04 or
the 2010? I am referring to the 04 guidelines.
Okay. Yep. Your Honor, I think the simplest way for me to say it, it would be my position would be that what was delegated to the committee properly that created the child support guidelines was the adoption of criteria numbers for calculating child support. And if it doesn't relate to the calculation of the amount of child support or an exceptional circumstance to deviate from the amount of child support, I think it serves the purpose of providing guidance. I think it serves the purpose of letting people know what the courts have traditionally done. But as a limit that the courts must observe, I think it is invalid as it doesn't have the force of law.
The guidelines in general or that particular provision, that type of provision?
The provisions that do not relate to the amount of child support to be awarded. The child support guidelines are a really interesting and complex set of numbers that try to take into account federal poverty levels for what amounts of money people need for themselves before they need to begin providing for their children. It takes into account how child support should be awarded and in what amounts in case son lives with dad and mom lives with mom. It takes into account the amounts of child support to be awarded if there's not joint custody, but the children visit overnights with each parent for more than a prescribed amount of time. They're very intricate and specific and valid to the extent that they establish those amounts.
So, as far as you know, there's nothing else in there that would be invalidated if we adopt you. You're implying there's a bright line or easy to apply test. There are things that relate to the calculation of amounts, and then there are things that relate to eligibility. Age 23, you would put that in the eligibility box. I've asked you, is there anything else in here that would be put in that box, in your view, under the application of your rule? And your view is at least you haven't indicated that there is anything that would fit in that criteria.
I'm not aware of anything else, Your Honor. To be perfectly honest, I haven't looked at the guidelines from that standpoint. But I think that I think it would be a fairly bright line rule to say anything over and above the calculations of amounts and the exceptional circumstances to deviate above or below the amounts dictated by the guidelines is anything else does not carry the force of law. Okay, it may be a recitation of prevailing practice which is instructive to people. I want to say one other thing because I think that there's a great danger of confusion. When Mr. Harris articulated the Yasumura case as standing for the proposition that the statute in some manner supports the tying of child support to education beyond for adult children, It does not so limit the family court. Okay, the discretion is broader than awarding child support to a child for so long as they are attending a college or a vocational course of study on a full-time basis, as is frequently ordered. The statute is broader than that. The court has the discretion to order that. Absolutely, it can place conditions on how long child support will go on because that's reposed to the discretion. What the statute actually says about the age 18 suspension by 19 if there's no proof that there's, that school has commenced or that a child is enrolled or is continuing their education. What it actually says is that in those cases where child support payments are to continue due to the adult child's pursuance of education, then there is this process for the child support agency to try to get proof of compliance with the educational requirement in those cases where the child support is to continue for that reason. That does not limit the universe of cases to other cases where child support is to continue, but it's not tied to education. All right? And I hope I made myself clear when I stated that the statute addresses itself to circumstances where a decree or a court order states child support shall continue for so long as the child is enrolled in school full-time in a university or vocational course of study. Many times decrees say that, and I think that is completely valid. All right. But in those cases where the court's order of child support for an adult child is conditional upon education, the statute is saying at that point in time, because the child support enforcement agency has an enforcement component to it, all right, in those cases where it would otherwise terminate if the child is not going to pursue their education, then in those cases it establishes some burdens as to, after the child turns 18, there needs to be some contact with the CSEA to let them know, yes, you need to keep collecting this child support because the child is still attending school. That's what that addresses itself to. This does not in any manner diminish the court's ability to say, well, Bill Gates, you have established some expectation and standard of living and so on and so forth for your child, so you're going to pay child support for your kids until age 40. No conditions whatsoever. You'll provide them $2,000 a month because you can and because the legislature allows a support obligation to be imposed for an adult child. That 18, 19-year-old limitation wouldn't apply because that award would not be conditional upon pursuance of education. And now, I think most people, when they hear, you mean the family court would have the discretion under the statute to order child support until age 40? I think the answer to that has to be yes, and I think we then have to place our trust exactly where the legislature placed it, which is in our family court judges, to exercise their discretion in a reasonable way. Similarly, the statute allows the family court to have broad discretion over where children are placed, okay? And that could allow placing them with a drug-using parent. But we trust the family courts to exercise discretion instead of providing artificial limitations, and we place our faith in the appellate courts to check the exercise of that discretion. So I'm not too insecure that I'm going to be able, or I'm not too confident that I'm going to be able to go get child support from my mom because I'm now 47 years old, all right, because I don't believe I could convince the family court to exercise its discretion in my favor, all right? But there are circumstances that I'm sure the court can imagine where it would be appropriate for the court to do that, where it might seem reasonable for the court to do that, and the legislature has allowed the family courts that much discretion. I feel very strongly that the ICA reached the right result in this case, which was continuation of child support beyond age 23 for Alana, but I'm in agreement that they reached it for the wrong reason, because exceptional circumstances, a requirement of making the family court find exceptional circumstances to continue beyond age 23, that's an artificial limit upon the court's granted discretion. And that was not done by the legislature. It was in some manner got the imprimatur of the family court when it ordered the implementation of the guidelines, but that was written by a committee. If the Supreme Court believes that there should be some limitation age-wise on the award of child support, then I think what the court should do is adopt what I have said, which is impose no age limitation, all right? And if it truly is a significant policy and social issue, there will be people knocking on the legislature's door saying, create a limit. And that's exactly who should be creating a limit if that were to eventuate. It's not for us to do that today. It was not for the Child Support Guidelines Committee to do. I want to leave the court, unless there are questions, I want to leave the court with something that I thought was extremely apropos from an opinion that was issued by this court only a week ago. And it was the Kakinami versus Kakinami case. The Kakinami case involved a construction of 580-47A, the very same statute we have today, all right? And you folks will probably recall that the construction in that case that was urged was that there should be some limitation upon the family court's ability to bifurcate a divorce from the other issues that arise in a divorce case, the dissolution of the marriage. And what the what was urged in that case is that the Supreme Court should impose an additional requirement beyond good cause, which is in the statute, and say that there need to be some much more stringent requirement in order to justify a bifurcation. And this court said, no, the statute is very clear. It just says good cause. And then this court wrote, Justice Duffy wrote, it is not the role of this court to alter a statutory requirement in order to effect policy considerations that are vested in the legislature. And when Justice Duffy wrote that, he was quoting and adopting what the ICA had said. But really, that's the policy consideration in this case, is that there should be judicial deference to a statute that's enacted by the legislature on a social matter such as divorce, and we as practitioners and the court as the decision makers need to draw the lines and not legislate. And we draw the lines by just saying, you know what, the family court judges, we will grant them as much trust as what the case law requires us to grant them, which is review for abuse of discretion.
Thank you, Mr. Kim. Mr. Harris, you have several minutes for rebuttal at this point.
I just want to say a couple of things. I think the seminal issue that we're all wrestling with here today is, what was the state of the law in 2005 in regard to adult child support, and what is it now? The statute is unquestionably expansive. It allows almost any child of divorced parents to at least request child support and allow the court to order it, with no real guidance, no real criteria that the court is allowed to follow. But this statute, in this respect, has been the subject of a limited amount of judicial decision making. And under that case law, we have evolved these limitations on full-time student, age 23, and so forth.
Were the age limits really at issue in those cases, though?
Well, I can't definitively answer that. I think the ICA actually, in their opinion, you know, somewhat surmised that if education was the purpose of allowing child support beyond age 18, that by age 23, the assumption was most kids would have graduated. The reference to Kakinami, which I have some familiarity with, I think is not exactly on point, because in Kakinami there was no subsequent case law other than dicta that dealt with the issue on point and in any way address specifically the issue of bifurcation there. We do have Navarrete, which isn't an extensive case law, certainly. But I think that is an important distinction.
I'll let you wrap up for 1 minute.
Okay. The only thing I was going to say is there is no case law that I'm aware of in this jurisdiction that says that a competent child of divorced parents over the age of 18, is entitled to child support other than for educational purposes. So the limitations that have come down to us through the legislative history, the limited case law, as reflected in the guidelines, not as, you know, legislated in the guidelines, supports the notion that it is for educational purposes, that a limitation on the age limitation has been accepted and has been applied for 15 years plus. That was the law when this case was before the family court. I think the family court was wrong in ignoring that law, and the Court of Appeals, I think, unfortunately, based its ruling on the wrong and inappropriate legal foundation. So we're back to the statute and the case law such as it is, which has not been overruled by further legislative enactment.
Thank you very much, Mr. Harris. Mr. Kim, a court will take this matter under advisement.